Hello and welcome to the Tesla Tips and Tricks podcast. This is Rod Stuckey. Here with me is EVBIDS co-founder and Tesla Tips and Tricks administrator, Tori Hornsby. Tori, how's it going?
It's going great, Rod. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. Happy to be back from spring break to get back after it. So in this podcast, we're going to be covering today some interesting posts from our T3 Facebook group, including checking battery health on used Teslas, monitoring battery degradation, useful tips for Sentry Mode, and some common Tesla misconceptions people think are true but are not. But first, for those who may be unfamiliar, Tori, tell us a little bit more about the Tesla Tips and Tricks community.
Sure. Yeah, it's the largest Tesla Tips community in the world. We have over 280,000 members, and our community provides real-world practical advice for Tesla owners to make owning and operating Teslas more enjoyable. And, you know, we do that for existing current owners, but also for prospective current owners. It's a big part of our group is people who are considering making a purchase, considering buying a Tesla. And obviously with 280,000 members, you can imagine the comments can sometimes get out of hand. So we work hard to remove spam, inappropriate content, and really just want to ensure that the community remains polite and courteous. And I do want to mention that if you're looking to sell or to buy a clean used Tesla, be sure you visit teslatipsandtricks.com. Check out the T3 marketplace. You can avoid all the normal marketplace drama from all the other marketplaces, and you can have an incredible experience with us managing that sale for you. It's absolutely the best way to buy or sell a Tesla.
Yes, it is. All right. Well, as we jump into these top five posts, please click like and subscribe buttons. It really helps us to keep the Tesla tips and tricks content coming your way. So coming in here at number five, this post is, I have a friend shopping around for buying a used Tesla. He's never owned a Tesla before. He wants to know if there's a way to check the life of the battery without taking the vehicle to the Tesla service center. This is right up our alley, isn't it, Tori?
Oh man, it's right up our alley. We focus on this a lot. Some of the comments, just going through it, the first one you see by Jen says that you can run a battery health test. Not every model has this available though. So the models that do have it available, you can either go to the service screen if you're sitting in your Tesla, or you can open up the Tesla app and you can go to service and you can run a battery health test. They've just released this in a recent update so that consumers, owners can run their own battery health test without having to go into service mode to do so. But not all models have that battery health test. Some of them have let me see exactly what it's called. It's not range test. What is it called? So going into service here, and it is called vehicle range. So it just says, I don't know if you can see this, but it just says vehicle range down there. And when you tap it, it'll do essentially the same thing. It's not a full battery test, but it does a range test to make sure that your range is lining up and everything's good to go. With that said, a lot of the other comments talk about other apps that are out there that you can download and that you can get a battery health test from them. And what I wanted to point out though is I mentioned T3 Marketplace just a second ago, and one of the big benefits of selling on the T3 Marketplace and buying on the T3 Marketplace is that we do a ton of research on the vehicle. We require 33 pictures, a walk around video, and we denote any kind of flaws that are known on the paint or on the interior. And we also let buyers know the full charge range of the vehicle, as well as what the battery health score is. So for instance, this 2024 Tesla Model Y with 12,000 miles, full charge range, it's a standard range. So the full charge range is 251 miles and the battery health is excellent at 96% of original capacity. So the score of the health is 96%, obviously an A, good to go there. But one of the big things that we point out here is charge cycles. So, you know, Rod, you asked this a while back and you made this this association with when we were young. I remember at 16 years old looking for my first car, and I knew flipping through Auto Trader, because there wasn't there wasn't an internet yet. You couldn't shop online. You went to the store every week and you got a new Auto Trader because it updated every week. And
it was a quarter. Dang. It was a quarter for one of those. Wow.
We're 25 cents. Yeah. Crazy. So if a vehicle had 90 plus thousand, 100,000 miles, you stayed away from it unless it had a transmission rebuild or an engine rebuild, because growing up, cars lasted 100,000 miles and you just didn't get more than that. And or you were going to have to do major work. And you know, technology's gotten so good, machining and tooling has gotten so good that now cars last a long time. But what is that number for a Tesla? Obviously, it's not mileage. They're made to last a 500,000 miles. So what's the real number that lets us know when we might have to do a major repair on a Tesla? And the number is charge cycles. So Tesla, Elon, it's been well documented that they've stated Tesla batteries are designed to last 1,500 charge cycles, as you can see on the screen here. A charge cycle means that the battery has charged from 0 to 100% one time. Now, you never do that. You never charge from 0 to 100%. So the way that the math adds up on the number of charge cycles is when you charge from 20% to 50%, that's 0.3 of a charge cycle. And then when you charge from 40% to 80%, that would be 0.4 or 40% of a charge cycle. So this battery here on this 2024 Model Y has only had 63.47 charge cycles out of a minimum. They're expected to last 1,500 charge cycles. So you can see as vehicles get older and the charge cycles get up, if you were getting up there closer to 1,500 charge cycles, you might want to make sure you're getting either a great deal or hit the pause button on getting that vehicle. So T3 Marketplace, you can list your car if you're wanting to sell there, or you can come and look and buy a car. We'll handle the paperwork. We can apply the tax credit. The $4,000 will be taken off of the purchase price if it's an eligible vehicle. And you're going to have full details in the photos and all of the write-up with warranty, performance spec, autopilot. If there's full self-drive, is it transferable? Is it lifetime? If there is a supercharger access, is it SCO1? Does it transfer free supercharging to the new user? We cover all of that in the T3 Marketplace. It's a good resource.
Yeah. And I love that 1500 charge cycles. I mean, that is the key metric for me when looking for a used Tesla. How many charge cycles has it had? And I just want to point out, back to the question in the post, one of the challenges is, as the buyer, the seller typically does not have this information readily available in the listing, with private parties or at a dealership. If you're looking at a Tesla, used Tesla at a legacy dealership, they have no idea where to find these metrics, nor do most private party sellers have this. And so it's really important to educate. I have a friend shopping around buying a used Tesla. It's really important as a buyer to understand how to coach a seller through doing a battery health test to be able to find that charge cycle number. And as Tori mentioned, that's something that we're experts with. You can contact us and we can help walk you through that process. But it's just not something typically that the sellers are going to promote, because they don't even know that. I mean, Tori, you just told me you were on the phone yesterday with a guy who's owned like three Teslas. He's an engineer and it's part of his work. He sells parts to Teslas and he didn't even know about the 1500 charge cycles. So it's really a compelling stat that not many folks are benchmark that not many people know about.
Yes.
Yep. All right. Well, that's a really good one. We're going to move on here to the next post, which is kind of in the same genre. Seems a good way to monitor battery degradation is to set your battery indicator to range instead of percentage and then keep a log going. Take us away with some of the comments on this post, Tori.
Oh, yeah, sure. So starting out, I want to mention, we typically recommend people put it to percentage and not mileage range, because when you think of a battery in terms of a capacity or a percentage of storage, if you run your air conditioner, your computer, your screens, your lights, all of the systems, full self-drive, all of that requires power. And when we think of the battery in terms of a percentage of storage, it makes sense. And it's easy to follow that Sentry Mode and auto summons and full self-drive and heated seats, heating the cabin, air conditioner, all of that uses the battery. It's harder for people to grasp that it uses range. So when you have it set to range and you're like, oh, I can drive 270 miles. No, you can't. And we've talked about this a lot, but you can't unless it's flat, perfect conditions, driving 45 miles an hour with very limited support systems and computer systems on, and there's no wind and it's a flat road and it's 70 degrees. So then, okay, yeah, maybe you can get just about that full range, but it's never a perfect world. And that's why we recommend it be set to percentage. But his idea here of if I charge, he says, example, I charge to 55% every night. Currently that puts me at 169 miles of range. When it drops to 168, I'll log it. Then I'll log 167 and so on. So there's a couple of challenges with this. First, when you charge your battery to 55%, I charge mine to 65% typically. And I notice when I get in the car, the range could be up or down a mile because it could be at 65.1 or 65.9 or 64. Maybe there was an update or maybe, I used a little bit of the battery when I was preconditioning the car before I got out there. And so it's not really exactly 55% in terms of the capacity that you've charged it to. And that range could go down and you have no degradation. It just isn't charged to the exact same 55.5%, So that's one challenge there. So it makes it very inaccurate. But comments are, first just, Anthony says, why go through the hassle? Just drive it. Whenever you have a battery issue, address it. That's what most of these comments are about is just, man, don't worry about it. Just drive it. It's pointless worrying about it. You'll lose 5 to 10% over the first 50,000 miles and then it'll plateau. Just drive it and enjoy it. And that's too much work unless you're just an enthusiast. So some people are engineering minded and they just want to know that. If it makes you happy, do it. Have fun. But you don't really need to worry about this at all.
Corey, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Isn't there a degradation metric for warranty that if your battery hits a certain amount of degradation within a certain mileage, you have a potential warranty situation? Or am I misremembering that?
That's 100% correct. So all the batteries have an 8-year limited warranty, and it can be either 100,000 miles or 120,000 miles, and may have been one that was 150, maybe, but it's either typically 100 or 120,000 miles, and it's 30% degradation. So when your degradation gets into the 60%, 69%, then of the capacity storage compared to new is at 69%, they'll replace the battery under warranty.
So when you look at a lot of these comments, say, why bother, what are you going to do? Well, it sounds like charting it at that granular of a level is probably overkill, but at a macro level, it is certainly worth looking when your vehicle gets to 100,000 miles to be sure that you haven't exceeded or before 100,000 miles, depending on which model you have, to be sure you haven't exceeded a 30% degradation, in which case you may be eligible for a warranty. So that is kind of one asterisk that I would put towards the people that are saying, what's the purpose of measuring degradation? What are you going to do about it? It would be worth that. And if you're looking to buy used, as the previous post was looking to buy used, that would be another interesting thing to kind of look at when looking at used higher mileage Teslas.
And I like the way Anthony put it, which supports what you're saying, Rod. He says, if you have a battery issue, address it. So basically, and I wouldn't do it at 55% every night. what I would do is once every few months, charge to 100%.
Right.
Because at 100%, it's 100%.
Yeah.
And that's a much better, more accurate depiction. And that is a good way to measure degradation. Some of these other apps, we do it. Some of the other apps do it by capacity and how much it can charge in total kilowatt hours. But it's a good, really accurate number to go, when this was new, it got 300 miles of range at 100%. Now it's getting 250 miles of range at 100%. So what's 50 miles loss of 300, it's 16-17% degradation. So when there's a problem, you'll really know it. That 30% number, if you think about from a 300 mile range car, it would need to be closer to 200 miles, because 30% is 90 miles of range. So there wouldn't be a warranty claim until your full charge is only less than 210 miles. So but measure it every once in a while if it makes you happy. And I, especially if you're buying a car, definitely, Rod, totally agree. But otherwise, drive it, have fun. And every once in a while, charge it to 100% or get one of these apps that will just do it for you way more accurately.
Yeah. And then just one other kind of caution that, I see, there's one commenter that says expect about 350,000 miles from your battery. But the person making that post does not state what year, make, and model. And if you, if you go with the 1500 charge cycles, times 300,000, that's 450,000 miles. So not every model has that type of range. I understand that some have less. And so I wouldn't listen to a round comment like 350,000 miles, because that's going to vary greatly depending on the year, make, model, and more look based on that charge cycles rather than mileage.
I just thought of something here that's interesting. Tesla prescribes, unless you have an LFP battery, they say always be charging and to charge in that mid-range. Well, ABC, as we say, instead of always be charging, it's probably better acronym is always be connected to the charger.
Yeah.
And here's why. Sure. So if your vehicle is using battery without it plugged in, why should you always be connected? Well, when you're plugged in, it can use your house power to power systems instead of having to use the battery capacity for a recharge. That's a charge cycle. So you're actually reducing charge cycles by leaving it always plugged into a charger.
Whoa.
I've never really thought about that.
Dude, you just blew my mind. I'm about to go out to my garage and plug in right now because of that. You just connected a dot for me that I knew. I've heard always be charging, always be connected. I did not understand the why behind it, and you just blew my mind. That makes
never really thought about it that way, but that's exactly why it is. You use the house power instead of capacity just to recharge it. That's a charge, part of a charge cycle. So
wow, that's very cool.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move on to number three. Does Sentry mode record any person trying to vandalize my Tesla? Depending on when you're listening to this podcast or watching it, we are in a really wacky time where people are going around vandalizing other people's Teslas because they have different political views. It's really a crazy time. So, Tori, take us away on this post here about Sentry mode and recording.
Well, I'm sorted by the most relevant comment. And so Facebook thinks that the most relevant comment is from Bob, who said, "It recorded me sneaking out to the garage at midnight, snagging a bottle of wine from the garage fridge, LOL."
I love Bob. He's my kind of guy.
Yeah. Melissa makes a good point though here. She says, just know that if you have 20% or less charge and you're not plugged in, Sentry mode stops working when you're less than 20%. But it, as long as it's turned on, it will record. And so instead of reading through comments here, I thought that this would be a good one to go to Tesla's website. I'm in a Model 3 owner's manual about Sentry Mode. So it references the Model 3 here when I'll read, but just know that it's the same for every other model as well. So here is what Tesla says about the Sentry Mode. When enabled, your vehicle's cameras and sensors, if it has sensors, remain powered on and ready to record suspicious activity around your vehicle when it is locked and in park. So it has to be locked, has to be in park. Think of Sentry Mode as an intelligent vehicle security system that alerts you when it detects a possible threat nearby. It doesn't alert you whenever it detects movement or starts your recording or says Sentry Mode. It detects you with a threat. So meaning if a threat is detected or the vehicle sensors determine that there's a lot of jerky movements, like it's being towed, somebody's trying to jimmy a lock, the car's being shaken, it will alert you on the alarm. So if somebody is vandalizing the car, like a spray paint or something, it'll record that based on the motion. It's not going to alert you because it's not being shaken. It doesn't sense the threat that way. But when it does sense the threat, Sentry Mode pulses the headlights. It sounds the alarm. It displays a message on the touchscreen that indicates cameras may be recording to inform individuals outside of the vehicle. It alerts you of the alarm on the mobile app, and then it will automatically save the footage to the USB drive if it is installed. And otherwise, if it doesn't detect a threat, the eye of, I forgot from Lord of the Rings, people call it it's the red little circle camera lens that comes on that looks creepy. So if it detects motion, it'll record that, or it'll display that on the screen. But if it detects a threat, it'll do these other things that we've mentioned.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people going to jail. There's a little bit of irony that in the first time in my 50 plus years on this planet that I remember a specific vehicle getting targeted for vandalism by a community, and they've chosen the one brand with the most high-tech camera system out there, and there's a lot of people going to jail because of Sentry Mode, and it's a beautiful thing. But I just want to point out, Tori, that the Tesla tips, they just keep on coming in this group, and I think that the best tip that I see here comes from Prophet Rogers, that's telling Bob that he can go into controls, safety, Sentry Mode, and enable the exclude home setting so he can sneak out to his garage and get that wine and not get busted by his wife. So I just think that is a brilliant tip that's buried in here in this particular post.
And on the app, just so people know, I have it set to turn off recording at home just so it doesn't use battery, although I'm always plugged in. So I guess I should leave it on because I'm always connected. But I have cameras at the house, and so I didn't really need it. But you can ensure that it's on in the app by going to security and drivers, and there's a toggle switch for Sentry Mode that you can activate surveillance. Now, one little last note here, Rod. The USB drive. We have a video where we go through how to format a USB drive and use it. Not all the ports in the car are eligible for the USB drive to save footage. Most cars, especially 2021 and newer, all of the 2021 and newer have a USB port in the glove box. And that's, of course, locked. You can make that to where you have to put a pin to open it. So nobody could break into the car, open it, and steal it. They'd have to put a pin in. And so that's a great thing to do, or a great reason to put a pin on your glove box. But if you don't have one in the glove box, it's one of the front two in your console area. So you'll have two USB ports there. You can use a USB hub if you get the right one. Just make sure that it's rated to USB 2.0 and USB 3.0 speeds. It needs to be both to work. And the same with the flash drive. So, and then you format it, you run it in, make sure that it's set up and gives you the thumbs up whenever you do it. Search for a video. I can put this in the comments on the YouTube channel and in Facebook. We can put a link to the video of the USB drive install that I did, but you do have to have the USB drive.
Yeah. Good stuff there. All right. Number two, it took me a year to realize you can insert the handle in the wall charger like a supercharger. A lot of people can't see your screen, Tori. Take us through what this picture that this guy has shared is.
It's a wall connector in his garage. And everybody who uses a wall connector that I've ever seen, you just loop it around. It's got the top of it is curved and made for looping that high quality electrical cable around. And then people just leave the handle hanging. Well, what Giuseppe is saying is he didn't know that you could put it into the side and click it in and there's actually a place for it to kind of plug into the side like it does at a supercharger, the plug. And so he's got a picture of that installed in his garage, I assume, and that it's hanging there. So you can do that, although I think most people will still just wrap it up and leave it hanging. You just don't want to leave it getting all messed up on the ground, right? So whether you loop the cable up and leave it hanging, or whether you loop the cable up and then plug it into the side, probably want to do one of those two things, not leave it sitting on the ground.
I feel better reading these comments. Barbara says, wait, it's been 5 years and I've had mine. I got to go look. And then Felicia says, well, it took me 2 years, so you win. I love seeing stuff like this because I find stuff out. You know, I remember, Tori, when I first got my Tesla and I was opening the charge port on the screen and you're like, dude, you know, you can press the button to open the charge port, right? And I'm like,
you're like, what button?
Yeah, and you're like, why do you think there's a button there? I'm like, what?
Do you remember that people used to tap the tail light, and they would hit that button after they're tapping the tail light to make the charge port open. And so everybody thought that to open the charge port, you took the plug and tapped the tail light. One of our moderators, Sam, it's a huge pet peeve of his. He absolutely hates it when people do that. And it's not true. You just press the button and it opens up. And when you do it that way, when you unplug it from charging, you know what it does? Closes automatically.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Exactly. Well, that's really cool. That's the one thing about a Tesla is you never stop learning. And sometimes it can be something silly. I'll probably continue to hang mine over, but it's just great to know that. So,
yeah.
So moving on here to this next one, I want to emphasize, share a common Tesla misconception. Tori, as you take us through these, I want to clarify, this is things that we're saying that our community members are sharing that are not true about Teslas, that are kind of, you know, rumors out there.
Yeah, that people believe is true, but they're not. A misconception. Yeah. Kimberly, and there's a lot of comments, but Kimberly's is the most relevant based on all of the rest of the feed, according to Facebook.
191 comments.
And she says, 191 comments, 22 engagements. It's reached 17,000 people. And Kimberly says, fire, fire. And that is, I see that on comments as well. It's going to catch on fire. The fact of the matter is, ICE vehicles, gas vehicles, are three times more likely to catch on fire. And people say, well, that's because there's so many more gas vehicles. No, this number is per 1,000 vehicles. So per 1,000 vehicles, they have a math of out of every 1,000 vehicles, here's the number that catch fire for gas vehicles or diesel, ICE vehicles. And out of every 1,000 electric vehicles, here's the number that catch fire. And it's three times less likely for an electric vehicle to catch fire. And people don't believe that. It's so funny to watch people. It's like, it's just fact. It's from the national highway. I can't remember, NHT, National Highway Division or whatever. So another one here says that you have to sit for hours charging on long distance trips. Rod, you just took a trip from Florida to Georgia, 6 or 7 hours? What was your experience?
Yeah, it's wild. You know, it's something that you just never would realize until you've road tripped in a Tesla, how good the supercharging network is. But the really fascinating thing is when you road trip in an ICE vehicle, you always fill your tank up till it's full and drive as far as you can. You know, with a Tesla, you plan your trip and you state what you want your charge rate to be at your endpoint, at your destination charging percentage. And then it just backs into when it wants you to stop. And, you know, on my trip, I had three stops. Two of the stops were 9 minutes. And then the third stop was like 16 minutes. And I arrived home with 15% charge. And so, I mean, a 9 minute charge, like I'm running in the gas station and using the bathroom, grabbing a sub sandwich, and I get out and my car is ready to go. So it definitely the myth of you're going to be sitting there 35 or 40 minutes on a road trip. Now, that could be different if you're in a rural community and you don't have superchargers, but you know, I-75 is just littered with Tesla superchargers. And so it was a quite pleasurable road trip.
And if you have an older, you know, Tesla that has had some degradation and maybe only started with the 55 kilowatt or 60 kilowatt hour battery, right, maybe your range is 120 miles and okay, yeah, a little more taxing.
Yeah.
But if you have a newer one or a long range, it just really isn't taxing at all. And in fact, if you were in an ICE vehicle, you would have had to stop at least once, right?
Oh yeah.
So really it took another 20 minutes, 25 minutes, you know, 20 minutes of time.
In my particular drive, you know, call it a 7 or 8 hour drive. I mean, you know, even if you could pull it off with one gas stop, you pretty much have to have an iron bladder to not have to stop again to go to the bathroom. So now you're at least two stops, maybe three, if you like me and you're knocking back coffee like it's going out of style. So,
yep. But yeah, you know, the trade-off, I mean, I remember when we used to say, hey, you're going on long distance trips, you know, keep an ICE vehicle. And I'm a drag racer. I love ICE vehicles. Like I have no issues with them in terms of that, but I appreciate the environmental nature of an electric vehicle and smog control and all that. But I love ICE vehicles too. And I used to think, you know, you should just always keep an ICE vehicle for your trips. And I've changed my mind on that. And I think you have too, Rod.
I really have.
I would rather it take 20 more minutes and have full self-drive. I mean, honestly.
Me too, man. I would rather take an extra 15 minutes and have my car drive the whole trip for me. It just spoils the living heck out of you. So,
yep. And then just a couple more here before we end this. Derek says a common misconception is, oh, they get recalled all the time. I remember once my wife sent me this text and she was alarmed, and it was Tesla recalls 2.5 million Teslas. And 2 days later, it did an update and the recall was fixed. It was just a software update, which is what most of these recalls, like the vast majority of them, are. Scott says, you know, spending 20 or 30 minutes at a fast charger is a bad thing. And you don't have to in the newer Teslas, but even in the older ones, 20 or 30 minutes these days, surfing through your phone, going inside, getting something to drink, using the bathroom, it flies by. It's not a big deal. Brad says that the battery's got to be replaced every few years. And that's not true either, as we've discussed, 1,500 charge cycles.
That one, you know, something kind of interesting. We've you know, got some different partners and different folks in the industry that we work with, and you know, we've had a lot of people that have gone out trying to find Teslas with bad batteries so that they could, you know, manufactured batteries. And go try to find a Tesla with a bad battery. Go search online that you want to buy. I mean, you know, there's plenty of junkyards where you can buy cars with blown engines and blown transmissions. Try to find a Tesla with a bad battery to buy. Because there's some good value there. You buy a Tesla with a bad battery and put a remanufactured battery in it. The problem is you can't find them. And so that is really, to me, telling with the myth about you have to replace the battery all the time.
Yep. And then just two more, or actually three more. Beth says they can't be driven in the rain. I've seen that one time. I've seen a comment where somebody said that one time, and it's like, that's not a thing. And then it says, aren't you worried about not being able to find a charger and running out of charge? No, the system is so good that if you set a destination somewhere, it's just going to route you to charge. And ABC, I have 2/3 of a tank of gas every time I leave my house. Yeah. My battery is 65%. And so I never worry about range. Tyler says that people say that the electricity to own one is much more than gas. Not true. Not true at all. And then last one, Mark, having a Tesla means you're rich. And that's not true, especially with the tax credit. And I'll just leave us with the little plug on that. If you need someone to process a tax credit, we can do it. I know a lot of people choose some other providers out there, but Tesla Tips and Tricks and EV Bids Merged, EV Bids, that's us too, we're both. And we do business as Tesla Tips and Tricks, but we are EV Bids. And we have our dealer license, and we're registered with the IRS to process a tax credit. So if you'd like for us to do that, you can go to teslatipsandtricks.com, click on tax credit in the navigation, and then click on learn more and put your information in, and we'll be in touch, and we can process that for you in your private sale.
Yep. So yeah, that's quite a few different myths out there about Teslas. So all fun stuff to go through. Good gracious, there is a lot going on in the world of Tesla right now as we go through this time. And I just bought some stock, a little more stock 2 weeks ago, and it's doing really good for me. So I hope the drama continues. Maybe it'll be some more buying opportunities. But with that, Tori, I think that wraps up this session of the T3 podcast. Anything else before we check out of here?
Nope. Check out the T3 marketplace, teslatipsandtricks.com, and we'll see you guys next time.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel, and thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.